Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, dear people, thank you so much for hanging out. It's almost Christmas time, but I just remember the other thing we're going to talk about. We just picked up Gene Andrews, our buddy, the Bitter Ender. We always say, and it's true, Lee surrendered, but Gene never did. Gene is still fighting behind enemy lines in guerrilla warfare. And last I heard, the Yankees have suffered a few major defeats. But anyway, Gene's going to talk to us about, among the other subjects Gene's going to talk about, he's going to tell us all about Pearl Harbor. And we're bringing Monica's own too. Monica Schaefer's going to come on. She's going to talk about this trial, infamous trial up there in Canada, and a few other things pertaining to Canada. And we still have Fred. Fred's going to remain for a few more minutes. So he's going to kind of wrap up what he and Jim Rizzoli talked about in the first hour. So go ahead, Jim. Finish up with what we talked about the first hour, if you don't mind, brother.
Jim and I were talking about David Cole. And how he is actually an Israeli worm or troll, as I call him. He may actually be a Mossad agent. We don't know, but he certainly wormed his way into the revisionist group. When he first came on the scene, I didn't trust him, nor did Ernst Zundel. And Ernst said, "Well, he's getting the publicity, so let's use him. The Jews use us all the time, so let's use him," and we did. But he's shown himself to be not a revisionist. At this point, he says that there were limited gassings in the transit camps. He attacked many of the major revisionists. He extorted money out of the Zundels. They purchased television equipment for him that he didn't use for what he was supposed to use it for. He then attacked many of our major revisionists, like Robert Forreson. He called Robert Forreson a clown. And while he was so-called underground in Los Angeles, he was making anti-revisionist films for the Jews. So he certainly is not a revisionist. He, in his book, unfortunately, Jim is gone now, but he has his a copy of his book, and he also commented on the fact that my father killed Elvis, apparently those are his exact words. That was the terminology that he used, but apparently what happened was he actually turned Elvis into he injected barbiturates and he injected different types of dope into Elvis. He injected morphine into his neck and his back because he had back pain, and I guess he turned Elvis into he gave Elvis a habit that he needed drugs constantly. And it's unfortunate, but his exact words were, "My father killed Elvis because he was Elvis's doctor." But anyway, that's essentially what we talked about. Do you have any comment on any of that, Monica?
Thanks. Those were real bombshells, the information about getting the money to make a film about the Ernst Zundel, and he never did do the film. And I guess he's, you know, on track to get money from others now to do things that he, you know, very well, he's doing the opposite. I also had not known that he had made films for the exterminationists while he was underground. And it should be also noted that he's kind of gone back and forth between the names Cole and Stein, or Stein, however you want to pronounce it. David Stein, David Cole, that's one and the same guy. Isn't it? Yeah. So, and then now maybe Cole Stein, like Cole Stein. But he is a bit of a slithery worm, like you say. And I suppose what he did early on, he got a lot of attention because here's a Jew telling us that there's no gas chambers in Auschwitz. And maybe his purpose all along was to worm his way in with the revisionists, get in on, you know, in the good, on their good side, get money, and then go do totally the opposite. You know, like the work he did after that is just completely against us. And also, if anybody calls Robert Faurisson a clown, I mean, it is so completely opposite. Robert Faurisson was a very serious man who was known for his exactitude. He used those words. Like, he was very particular about attention to detail. He would never, ever have said anything that he didn't have 100% certainty of and proof of. And he also was well-mannered. He was the opposite of how David Cole or David Steen portrays him, a clown. I mean, really, that's the opposite. So that kind of shows him his colors right there, because fish swim and birds fly and Jews lie. That's kind of a given. So, you know, they turn it all inside out, upside down. So back to you.
Yeah, I had a bad feeling about him from day one. I mean, when I first saw him, this is in the film he made, he was interviewing Piper, and he is this young, very young Jew wearing a yarmulke, running around proving that there were no gas chambers. And of course, naturally, people said, wow, I mean, he's a Jew and he's also a revisionist. That's how we started. That's how we got. That's how we got everything going. That's how we got the attention. And as I say, Zundel was not comfortable with him. I was not. I spoke to Ernst about him. I have some reservations. Where did you get him? Ernst looked at me and he laughed. He says, I have reservations too. But he said, the Jews use us all the time. He's a Jew. Let's use him. He gets the publicity. He's saying that there's no gas chambers. It can't do anything but help us.
That's right. And I mean, those films, the documentary or the video of David Cole in Auschwitz and showing and proving that there's no gas chambers, that is very good. That's useful. Also, we couldn't really predict the future and know what he was going to do next. So I think it's completely legitimate and good that.
But what people don't realize, and Ernst realized it, but he said, let's use him anyway. He didn't say anything new about the alleged gas chamber at Auschwitz than any of the other revisionists had been saying for the last 20 years. I mean, he said that it used to be a morgue, then it was a bomb shelter. And then the Russians modified it. Well, he didn't explain the modifications. All they did was take down the baffle walls so it was no longer good for a bomb shelter. So, I mean...
I think what happens is when a Jew says it, normies pay more attention. You know, people who haven't looked into it yet.
That's true. That's true. But he really didn't say anything different than anybody else said. It's just that this little Jew boy with the yarmulke on it, that's what showed up.
That's right.
You know, that's what showed up. And he used that, and he used that to worm his way in, because I talk to revisionists now, and I say revisionists, I'm not talking about people that are really knowledgeable. I'm not talking about people that are known. I'm talking about people on Facebook that follow revisionism and believe it. And they still think that Cole is alive and a real revisionist.
Yeah.
And when I tell them, they say, what?
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, I wanted to just comment one other thing, and that was about the Nuremberg trials. I just always cringe about the Nuremberg, and now they're always talking about, bring on Nuremberg 2.0 for the COVID scam. But the Nuremberg, that kind of reinforces some big lies. Like, for example, yes. You had mentioned Mengele, and I know that you know that he was lied about too, but that needs to be clarified for the listener that he's the second most lied about man on this face of this earth. I think Adolf Hitler is the most lied about, and Joseph Mengele is the second most lied about man, because he didn't do any of those evil things that they accused him of. I mean, they extracted all those so-called confessions with torture and other means during the Nuremberg trials, and you were right, they should have been called something different. But now when people invoke the Nuremberg trials, I always cringe, because I think, well, they were completely illegitimate. Yes, perhaps some good rules and laws came out of it. Of course, they're ignoring all that now with these mandatory injections, the poison shots that they want to give everybody on the face of this earth. But it always invoking Nuremberg code, and thereby reinforcing lies from, oh, well, gee, they those were so good because they stopped, you know, they punished the evil Nazis. And of course, that's a problem word, just like you pointed out earlier. So that's my comment about that.
Well, you know, we're about to go to our first break. Thank you so much, Fred, for staying on tonight. Thank you for very much. And thank you for clearing up what we did the first hour. We'll be going to a break any second. And when we come back, we'll get Gene to take off on. He has some news from Nashville. And he's going to talk about Pearl Harbor. And then we'll bring Monica on to bring us. She's going to talk about this trial up there in Canada and some other things. So thank you so much, Fred. And thank you so much, Jim. People, we'll be right back. Second segment, second hour, after this quick break.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
Hello, friends. This is Jacob from Blood River Radio. We call the kings into account and tell the truth to shame the devil on this show every week because we are of the firm conviction that our cause cannot succeed without true revival amongst the remnant, amongst that principled minority of the dispossessed majority. Now is the time to stand and be counted, to do like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would not bow down to the false idols of their day, even under pain of death. Like the 300 mighty men of valor who surrounded the Midianites with Gideon, or the 7,000 men that God told the prophet Elijah had not bowed their knees to Baal in a time when even calling fire down from heaven would not awaken our kinsmen from their slumber. If you are encouraged by our labors in the trenches for the kingdom and the cause of truth, liberty, and righteousness, I urge you to consider supporting this program. No donation is too small. We can do with thousands or even hundreds what our enemies and the powers and the principalities of this present darkness need tens of millions to do. So please donate today at BloodRiverRadio.com and help us take up the hedge and stand in the gap against the great evils of our time.
Being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Well, dear Blood River Radio audience, we won't detain you another minute. I kind of mismanaged the second hour, but we're going to go right back to Gene. We have Gene on. my good buddy Gene Andrews, and we also have Monica Schaefer. In case you're just tuning in, and Gene's going to take off. We're changing directions now. We're going to talk about Pearl Harbor, Memphis being the number one most dangerous city in the United States, Confederate battle flags, I think, in Nashville. Gene wants to talk about that. Statues in Nashville. Monica's going to bring on, tell us about this court case up there in Canada, just in case y'all are just coming on. And she's got some other things she wants to talk about. So, Mr. Bitter Ender, my brother, go ahead and take off and tell us where we want to just take us where we're going. You don't even have to say where we're going. This is go.
Well,
tell us when we get there.
And what I want some clarification on, why is it every time I come on, you play that Clint Eastwood clip that says, "Well, do you feel lucky, punk? Well, do you?" What an introduction, Eddie.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're lucky. I'm the luckiest guy. I got the best people in the world. I couldn't do it without y'all. That's for dang, I'm sure. Like I told our audience,
Fred, there, that first segment, they were great, as always. And really shone the light on our deceitful enemies, how they'll weasel into any organization. And that's what these people do. They destroy a country. They destroy an organization from the inside. It's like a cancer. And, we have to realize that. And, you know, we say these, well, it's our only allies in the Middle East. If we weren't the lapdogs for Israel, we wouldn't need allies in the Middle East. We wouldn't be the enemy of the Arab nations in the Middle East. But, you know, we're not smart enough to figure that, or our politicians have been bought out, and they have to buy into that. So, anyway, and just to add something to what Monica and Fred had in the first hour.
But, that's an excellent point. You're right on. Yeah, you're absolutely right on. We would not need. Go ahead.
Talking about Pearl Harbor, and we had another incident here in Nashville on December 7th, a date that will live in infamy, not only in Pearl Harbor but in Nashville. The area out there, the park south of Nashville, that was owned by Bill Doris, and after he passed away, it went through a lot of legal shenanigans back and forth, lawyers and children contesting the will and everything like that. Finally wound up, the land was split up, and the Nashville, I've forgotten what the official title is, Nashville Battlefield Preservation Trust, which is basically a nice name for a bunch of carpetbaggers that have moved in and want to rewrite history and tell how wonderful the U.S. Army was for coming down here and murdering civilians and destroying homes and, you know, turning our countryside into a wasteland. So they got the area where the statue, equestrian statue of General Forrest was there on I-65 south of Nashville. So the first thing they did on December 7th was to have it torn down and hauled off. And, of course, they called the news media to make sure the news media was out there with their cameras. And the news nerds were just, you could see it on the evening news. They were jumping up and down and wetting their pants. They were so excited about a Confederate monument being torn down. And that's all they could brag and yap and carry on about, that this monument had been torn down. Now, that was during the day. During the night of December 7th, Operation Midnight Rider, borrowed that title from the Allman Brothers Band, of course, struck back. And there are 14 flagpoles out there. And when the sun arose on December 7th, there were 14 Confederate battle flags flying from those flagpoles out there. So, yes, they got round one, but the Midnight Rider operation got round two. So our flags are back out there. And if there's anything that the liberal geeks hate worse than Forrest when they're on their morning commute driving into Nashville, and that part of the interstate, between, say, 7 and 8:30 or 9, you're crawling along at about 10 miles an hour. So it's, you can't go zipping through there at 75 or 80. You have to creep along in traffic, and you have to sit there. Probably takes you 2 or 3 minutes to get past that part of the interstate. Have to sit there and look at our flags flying down at them and, you know, looking down on them, as always, and just say, well, you won round one, but guess who won round two? So that was sort of a sweet victory to replace their one-day victory stand that they had.
So, I love that. I couldn't love that more. That's the best news I've heard, Gene.
Yeah. Now, I don't know who did that, of course, but it's somebody out there at night, and somebody was putting them up. Somebody was holding, as I understand it, somebody was holding a flashlight in between their teeth to shine on the lock on the poles. So, I mean, that's just a rumor. You know, I don't know anything about that. So, Anyway,
I'll tell you what, that took cojones to do that, and I salute the people that we don't know that
but
did
we
that.
Don't know, yes. I'll see if I can pass it on, you know,
pass it on to people that we don't know. Man, that.
Serious note, we were talking about Pearl Harbor and what a deceitful job the United States government did in drawing us into a war that we had no business being involved in. And, you know, that sounds like kind of a wild claim. In a way, it kind of goes against my family because my father was drafted into the service in World War II, as were two of my uncles, and I had one uncle that volunteered. And they thought they were doing the right thing. And they thought, you know, we'd been attacked in a surprise attack, and, you know, we were sitting there just innocent as little lambs, and all of a sudden the Imperial Navy of Japan attacked us. But I think people need to learn factual information about what happened. And I've done a lot of reading about World War II and what caused it and what brought it on. And one of the best books, of course, for the whole operation in Europe and in the Pacific is M.S. King's book, The Bad War. And yes, he really lays the facts out. In fact, goes all the way back to Bismarck in the mid-1800s and up through World War I and how we relied into that one, and then how we relied into the French and the British starting a war in Europe against Chancellor Hitler and the Germans. And then the other book that really lays the facts bare about what Roosevelt did in trying to get us into a war with Japan, which he did. Well, back it up. Roosevelt tried and tried and tried every low-down trick he could get to start a war with Germany, and the Germans wouldn't take the bait. They knew what he was doing, but Roosevelt was such a communist and a communist admirer, and, you know, he worshipped Joseph Stalin and the Russians, and he was trying to do whatever we could to get in, drag the United States into war to save the Soviets. And not only that, but how many Jewish advisors he had on his cabinet and in the high places in the American government. And, of course, they wanted a war against Germany because Germany had cut off the Rothschilds. And that just sent them right over the edge when he took the money away from them. So there's that newspaper, front page of that Jewish newspaper in New York that was published in 1933, where the Jews declared war on Hitler and declared war on Germany, and they tried and tried and tried to get the United States to boycott the 1936 Olympics in Berlin. And like I said, Roosevelt had tried everything, firing on German ships, selling war materials to the British, and the Germans wouldn't take the bait. So when that didn't work, he had to get a war with Japan so he could get a backdoor war with Germany. And the proof of that is in a book by Robert Stinnett. It's called Day of Deceit, and it tells all the things that Roosevelt did to set up Admiral Kimmel and General Short on the Hawaiian Islands, and especially the Navy at Pearl Harbor, to set them up as targets for an attack by the Japanese. And they claim that it was a total surprise attack, and we didn't know what was coming. Roosevelt knew it was coming because he had provoked it, and the Japanese messages that were being sent were picked up, but they weren't given to Admiral Kimmel and the Navy in Hawaii, because if they had done that, they would have been ready on December 7th. Well, they'd have been ready several days before that for an attack by the Japanese Navy. And the worst piece of evidence ever and is the fact that Admiral Kimmel had a darn good suspicion of what was coming. They had intercepted the Japanese codes or messages. They hadn't cracked the naval code, but they were getting messages from Japanese oil tankers in the North Pacific. And the North Pacific is just as dangerous in the wintertime as the North Atlantic is, and they're thinking, why in the world would these ships be in the North Pacific in the wintertime? And they concluded the only reason they're up there is to refuel the Japanese fleet that's headed this way. So Admiral Kimmel on November the 23rd sent the fleet out of Pearl Harbor into the North Pacific. And the idea was they had a red fleet and a blue fleet, and the red fleet was supposed to turn around and figure out how they would attack Pearl Harbor, and the blue fleet was to figure out how to intercept them. On November 25th, Roosevelt ordered them back into Pearl Harbor, and that's where they were on Sunday morning, December 7th.
My guy with the treachery. People, we'll be right back to our second segment. We're midway through the second hour. We're going to come right back to Jeannie as soon as we get through. Then right after that, we'll bring Miss Monica on.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News. I'm Brad Bernards. Dozens were feared dead after tornadoes and severe weather caused catastrophic damage across multiple states, tearing through a candle factory in Kentucky, an Amazon facility in Illinois, and a nursing home in Arkansas. Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear.
We were pretty sure that we would lose over 50 Kentuckians. I'm now certain that that number is north of 70. It may, in fact, end up exceeding 100 before the day is done. The damage is even worse now that we have first light.
Football star and TV celebrity Michael Strahan caught a ride to space with Jeff Bezos' rocket launching company Saturday, sharing the trip with the daughter of America's first astronaut. Touchdown has a new meaning now, he tweeted after landing. This is USA Radio News.
If cancel culture and censorship continue at their current pace, there will soon be nothing left of the truth. The Epoch Times was founded to keep truth alive. We ask the questions we think you'd ask. We check facts without regards to any political agenda. No one tells us what to cover or how to cover it. We're not influenced by big corporations or political parties. Our great passion is to expose the spread of socialism and communism. We cover the Chinese Communist Party and how it works to subvert American education and politics. We cover big issues like election integrity, the exploding national debt, the fight against coronavirus, and the truth about its origins. We cover Democrats and Republicans in exactly the same way. We have a special trial subscription offer right now. 1 month of our printed paper and total access to our amazing online content for just $1. You'll find it at TrustedNewspaper.com. 1 month, $1. TrustedNewspaper.com. Help the Epoch Times keep truth alive.
Joe Biden on Thursday downplayed his historic inflation crisis during remarks at the Summit for Democracy.
Not everybody's looking for a used automobile, but those who are, they're paying higher prices because there's fewer of them because of COVID and what was sold out and the like. So I think it's a real bump in the road.
Inflation is the number one concern for Americans, according to a CNBC survey. This month, inflation is at the highest level in 40 years. Prices are up 6.8% over last year, a new record. Labels placed on posts on Facebook accompanying so-called fact checks are opinion, lawyers for the social media platform's parent company said in a recent court filing. Television host John Stossel sued Facebook and two of its fact-checking partners earlier this year, accusing the entities of defaming him. Facebook placed a label over the video telling users it was missing context. This is USA Radio News.
Well, dear people, dear Blood River Radio family, we're going to go right back to Gene. We have Miss Monica on. These two precious people, I'm just so excited to have them on. And anyway, we're going right back to you now, Gene. Carry on, brother.
No, we were just discussing the real causes of World War II. And a good friend of ours, Mr. Buddy, sent me a copy. It's a little booklet. It's not that big, but it was Hitler's Declaration of War against the United States that he presented to the Reichstag, and it was 38 pages, the total number of pages of that speech, and it said in the introduction, took about 80 minutes to present that to the Reichstag, and then they voted to declare war on the United States because the United States had declared war on Japan, which was an ally of Germany, which brought Germany into the war. But the interesting thing was, in those 38 pages in that book, 16 of those 38 pages, Chancellor Hitler laid out all the things that Roosevelt and the United States had done to Germany and to German ships and submarines and German personnel fighting the war against Great Britain and France, all the things that the United States had done that were totally illegal, not only in international in a court of law, but also it went against our Neutrality Act that the United States Congress had passed that Roosevelt totally ignored. And besides actually firing on German surface ships and on German submarines, which was an act of war, they violated our own Neutrality Act in trying to draw us into a war. And like I said, the Germans had enough sense to know they were being set up for a trap. And Admiral Rader was just furious at what they were doing to German ships and submarines. And he was begging Hitler to let them return fire. And Hitler was smart enough to tell him, said, no, we're being set up. And said, you fire back at them with a BB gun, and the Americans are going to take that as an act of war and declare war on us. And now we're going to have to fight England, France, and the United States. So they stalled as long as they could, but then once, like I said, once the United States declared war on Japan and Japan was an ally of Germany, then that brought Germany into the war. So it was very devious. And Monica had mentioned that during our break there, of all the dirty shenanigans that the United States has pulled, and we thump our chest and talk the arsenal of democracy and all this holy horse manure that they shovel out of Washington. And it's just, when you really look at the facts and study these situations from a factual standpoint and not we're the good guys and they're the bad guys, you see how devious and corrupt the United States government has been. And it goes all the way back to the 1840s. And I subscribe to that Barnes Review, the politically incorrect version of history. And one of the articles in this last issue was about the war with Mexico. And after the War for Texas Independence, the United States, or the Republic of Texas, got most of what is today the state of Texas. But there was a dispute on where the southern boundary should be. And they were negotiating back and forth, whether it was the Brazos or all the way down to the Rio Grande. And the Texans that won their independence didn't say anything about the border going all the way down to the Rio Grande. And so President Polk, James K. Polk, unfortunately a fellow Tennessean, and decided, and with the pressure of people in Congress, to provoke an incident where the United States would declare war on Mexico. And the really rotten thing about it was this manifest destiny had swept the country, and they believed the United States should go from the Atlantic all the way to Pacific. Well, the dispute was over just a few hundred square miles in South Texas, but they sent the cavalry into what was obviously Mexico's territory to provoke an incident where they would fire on the United States Army cavalry, and they did. And that was the tiny excuse that they used to declare war against Mexico, not only take over that territory in South Texas, right along where the Rio Grande is today, or was back then, but that territory they were debating over back then. But then they went after Arizona, New Mexico, and the main thing they wanted was California, because then that would give them ports on the Pacific. And so what should have been a dispute over just a few hundred square miles or a small section along the southern border of Texas was used as an excuse to go all the way across country and take California away from Mexico and have ports on the Pacific Ocean. And that's what they did. And talking about the brutality of Winfield Scott and the bombardment of Veracruz and targeting civilian targets and how many civilians were killed under this artillery barrage, it was almost like dropping the atomic bomb on that town of Veracruz. How many buildings were destroyed, how many civilians were killed in that, which is totally unnecessary, but they did it anyway. And, you know, you just look at all of these wars that the United States fought, and I bring this up to people, and they accuse me of being un-American. I say, no, I'm not. I think America had the potential of being a great country and a great example to the world, but we threw it away. We fought wars for personal gain, for acquiring territory, the Spanish-American War to take the colonies away from Spain, the War for Southern Independence. Lincoln needed a war, and he needed the South to fire the first shot, so he had an excuse to invade the South and force this part of the country to be a part of the United States. and used a brutal dictatorship. And the office of president has become more and more powerful, and more times it just totally ignores Congress. And like Roosevelt, like Lyndon Johnson, like what's going on now, and it keeps getting worse instead of better. And yet we never learn from any of these, and we make excuses for all of this. And the American people are so ignorant of the true facts of why we've been drawn into these wars. First World War in Europe, Second World War, Vietnam, wars in Iraq, Afghanistan. And then my one that's brought home to us, we had a country here in the South, and it was invaded and literally destroyed. I mean, scorched earth policy, burned it to the ground. And people say, oh, well, we're all one country now. And I said, not by choice. 13 states had a legitimate referendum on staying in the United States or leaving, and 13 states voted to leave. And we're in the United States at the point of a gun. We were forced to be a part of it.
Yes, sir.
So don't tell me that we're all one nonsense now. So
to this day.
To this day, absolutely. To this day. So anyway, that little tidbit of past history being brought up there, it didn't start recently. It's been a long time coming. And it seems like every administration gets further and further and further away from the principles of our Constitution.
Yes.
That were given us in 1789 and ratified, or 1787 and ratified 1789. And the old story they tell, it when Benjamin Franklin was leaving, and the woman asked him, well, Dr. Franklin, what type of government will we have? And he said, a republic, madam, if you can keep it. And we certainly haven't kept it.
We haven't.
Fallen down on what was given to us. And I know,
and you know
the
you're absolutely
people in,
right, Gene.
Like Monica and people in Canada look at us and kind of say, well, when are they going to invade Canada? Or, you know, why do we have to be under the thumb of the United States? Or, and, you know, the United States did try to invade Canada at one time and were kicked out. Thank goodness. I'm glad the Canadians stood up to them. So, man.
Yeah. You know, if I could just add some comment to your excellent bit of a history lesson there that you gave, and it was just so interesting and so good. But you know, another thing that we discussed in the break is who's pulling the strings and who's behind all this, and you did mention about the Israeli cabinet, or maybe it was Netanyahu, said, well, we own the American Congress. And I think that maybe it was Ariel Sharon also who said, you know, don't worry, you say the Americans will do this or do that if we do this or do that. And don't worry, we, the Jews, control America, and they know it. And I mean, so that's what's going on. You know, Pearl Harbor, and they sacrifice their own to serve an agenda, like Americans, you could say. The president of the United States knew this was happening, provoked it, and many Americans died, and that was a sacrifice, really.
Yes, ma'am.
They were the sacrifice. And same thing on 9/11, lots of Americans got sacrificed to serve a Jewish agenda in
yes.
the Middle East for
Absolutely.
Eretz Israel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Certainly
so,
did.
I mean, that's you know, get this sort of a guilt about what we or our governments have done, it's really important, I think, to go to the root of it and who's behind all this, and who is it that we're not allowed to criticize lest we be called anti-Semitic. And you know, that old quote from Voltaire, to learn who rules over you, simply find out who you're not allowed to criticize.
Oh, that is so true.
Well, Monica, as soon as we come back from this break, my little sister, we're going to go right back to you.
Okay.
And we'll be right back after this break, people. Hold on.
Attorney Jason Robb, General Counsel of the Knights Party, based out of Harrison, Arkansas, and proud supporter of Blood River Radio. I, like you, am concerned about the destruction of our beloved America and our racial kindred people and our cherished liberties. As an individual and as a nation, liberty is what we seek. Liberty is important. It is what allows us to be independent, and if properly used, liberty allows us to fully worship God in all areas of life. And with that worship comes more liberty. We are on the verge of anarchy in this country, and personal liberty is looked upon as a crowning achievement of the people. However, Christianity and white law and order is viewed as the enemy of this newfound freedom, and that is why it is under attack. Learn more by listening to Blood River Radio every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m.
During our war for Southern independence, the brilliant Confederate general Robert E. Lee foretold the decline of this country when he prophesied, "If those people," referring to the dictatorial federal government, "if those people win this war, the United States will become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home." As Lee predicted, it has come to pass. The principles laid out in our founding documents, our Declaration of Independence, and the individual rights protected in our Constitution have been vilified and discarded. But not everyone has surrendered. Blood River Radio brings you highly respected, intelligent guests not afraid to speak the truth when the truth in America today is censored and attacked. Your contributions keep us on the air in order to fight against the bullies abroad and the tyrants at home. Send your war contributions to Blood River Radio, P.O. Box 34636, Bartlett, Tennessee 38184. That address is on our website, www.bloodriverradio.com. Don't let the bullies and the tyrants win.
Well, people, we're going to go right back to our wonderful guest and co-host, but I'm just going to chip in this one thing that I've come to believe. We've been talking about the war and, you know, Lincoln's war against the South and the United States' war against everybody in the world. Actually, here's the way I look at it. We have a country of kind of like we have a place called the City of London. I think it's a 1 square mile area, 2 square miles, where all the big international bankers are that really run the show. We have a place here in the United States in this continent called District of Columbia. I think it's 10 square miles. And that, the District of Columbia, they run the entire world. They're like an alien force on Earth. This is my picture of it. And they control every other nation in the world that they can. They hate and despise the so-called United States, the American, the flyover country. They hate us as much as they hate anybody in the world. They're as cruel to us as they are the Iranians, the Iraqis, the Germans. They're the enemy of everyone. They're the enemy. The people in the District of Columbia are the evil, Satanist, Bushovics, child molesters, drug addicts. They're Satan's children. And they are the enemy of every free individual person in the world. Everybody in the world that wants liberty, that's halfway decent, they are hated by this 10-square-mile the District of Columbia. And they will not stop until they run the whole damn world. That's the way I look at it. They're an alien to everyone, not just United. And they're just as evil to their own so-called people. They're probably more cruel to the South than they have been the Iraqis. I don't know. But anyway, back to you, Monica.
Yeah, Eddie, did you want me to tell you about that trial that just happened, actually the verdict this morning?
Please do. Please do.
Please.
Yeah, and this is sort of switching direction here, but and if anybody is just tuning in right now, I would encourage you to go to the archives and listen to the earlier part of this hour, because the history lesson we got from Gene Andrews was just absolutely, well, just blows you away.
Yes.
What he fit into that, you know, a short period of time. It was really, really good, like about Pearl Harbor and also other matters and how these wars get started and whatnot. So anyway, but Bill Watcott, he's a Christian man who has been really fighting the LGBTQ agenda for quite some time. And so what he did, this was a few years ago, I'm not sure exactly when this was, but the Gay Pride Parade that took place in, I believe it was in Toronto, he and some of his buddies dressed up as these gay zombies. They were in these green body suits.
Gay zombies.
Gay zombies who were handing out little packet, like a little packet of information, like a little pamphlet. And yeah, you can actually find a picture of him online. He's got this little tutu on over this bodysuit, this green bodysuit. Anyway, and he's just handing out a little information packet. And I took a look at that information packet, and it's mostly medical information. I believe Bill Walcott was also a medical nurse formerly. And so he comes by his information honestly. And he showed some graphic pictures in that little pamphlet of what can happen with the sodomy and whatnot, like really ugly diseases happen, and gave some good medical advice and talked about the hazards of the gay lifestyle to your health. And he also criticized Trudeau, our prime minister, and the Liberal Party. And he finished with a verse, a biblical scripture about how you can basically, you know, redeem and resurrect yourself. And he also, there was a story in there of a man who had been a he was a tranny who then found God, found the Lord, and went back to, you know, being who he was supposed to be and born a man, and that he was now a man again. But in between, he had tried to pretend that he was a woman and actually had the surgery and everything. So this is really quite sad, but he did. So that was all in that little pamphlet, and this was what was handed out. And now he's been fighting the courts for a long time on this ever since that happened. I know at first they wanted him to pay $1 million or something, and anyway, it all went to trial, and the verdict came yesterday morning. And if he had been found guilty, he would have faced 18 months in prison. That's what the prosecutor wanted, 18 months in prison for. This was like hate literature that he was handing out. And so this is what he was facing, and it didn't look good. But anyway, he actually was found not guilty of this. So he's going to spend Christmas at home with his family and not be going to jail. Now, that's really good news for Bill Walcott. And I'm just so happy that that's the way that went. And many, many people are so relieved and happy. However, the judge in his statements does give cause for some concern, because he made some remarks about how really this thing that was being handed out there at the Gay Pride Parade was bordering between free speech and hate literature. I mean, he was actually saying this is in the gray zone. This is in the gray zone. But I guess, you know, he found it wasn't black enough for him to be throwing this guy in jail. I think he saw that would cause a big uproar. But that is of concern, that the judge would make those statements and not come out clearly and strongly and say, this is like, there was no crime here. What was the crime? There was no crime. This is actually potentially life-saving information. That's the reality of it. This medical information in there, if people would actually take that seriously, that's the reality of that, is it's potentially life-saving. And I would say also not just physically life-saving, but spiritually, then, with his finishing the pamphlet with the scripture and biblical. And, you know, people can take that or leave it. Besides which, lots of things get handed out at parades. People hand out candies, people hand out flags, people hand out all kinds of stuff. Now he's in the Pride Parade just handing stuff out, and the person receiving this, they have a choice. They can, if they look at it and they don't like it, well, they can toss it out. Like, what's the problem there? I mean, the whole thing was ludicrous from start to finish. So happy he was given the not guilty verdict. But, you know, this gray zone thing is of concern. And I'll hand it back to you, Eddie, for comment, or to Gene.
You know, I just pulled up.
He hit the nail square on the head, Monica. It's how it's a perfect example of how ludicrous and insane our governments are today, that where they can declare that truth, factual information, not slamming a group or saying, well, you ought to go out and kill these people because we don't believe in them, believe what they believe. They're not saying anything bad about the individuals. They're just saying this lifestyle or this ideology is dangerous to your health and to the existence of a country, a free society, because of the following fact. Fact number one, fact number two, medical fact number three, medical fact number four, or look at past history, what this lifestyle or this type of socialist, communist ideology has done to these people, and here's a historical fact, one, two, three, four. So the government is so afraid of the truth that anything that disagrees with the government ideology, whether it's a gay lifestyle or whether it's conservatives in Congress or, you know, stopping some of the insanity that this government has done in the last 10 or 12 months, then they declare it racist or hate speech or anti-Semitic, and automatically they use those buzzwords, and that person is instantly designated as an evil person, a person that needs to be drug into the court system and run through, and I'm surprised that he didn't get jail time for this, but and you are, of all of us, have experienced this type of prejudice against anybody that doesn't agree with the norms of the government and what you had to go through in Germany. So
yeah.
That's the type of so-called judicial system or laws that we have today that are totally ridiculous because they only defend people that agree with them. And
that's right.
They have no tolerance for the old standards that were held up and had lasted for centuries and preserved society and preserved a cohesive existence in civilization.
Yeah, so, and if you had seen some of the you're probably familiar with some of the other things that happen in these pride parades, so-called pride parade.
Oh, gosh, they're horrible.
There's some really perverted and overt sexual acts going on.
Yes.
And total, I don't know, it's just ugly and perverted, and it's certainly not family friendly. And yet there's children, there's families. This is daytime downtown cities that these parades happen, and none of those people get charged with their what are the some of the laws that you know with
pornography
pornography or doing acts in public that
lewd acts that, you know yeah
exactly no none of them get charged. Like, in fact, the picture of Bill Walcott in his full bodysuit and handing out these little pamphlets right beside him there's a nude man. Just totally
100% nude. He's naked as a jaybird.
Yeah. So, but that's all good. But it's just whatever is politically correct, you know.
Mm.
Yeah.
And Molly, here's what the scripture said that they were handing out. One of the scriptures that Bill Walcott was handing out. Here's what it says. This is the real hate, y'all. It says, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall live." Quote Jesus Christ, who said that. But go ahead.
Well, you can't have that. That sets a standard. You can't do that.
That's right. Now, here's the thing. If somebody has no interest in that, they don't need to pay attention to it. It's not a crime to be handing something out, especially in a parade. That's what they do. They hand things out. It's you don't have to look at it. You can throw it away. You can disagree with it. Where's the crime? This is, and then they call it a hate speech or, you know, a hate crime. Anyway, it does illustrate the complete upside down nature. Everything is inverted. Good is bad. Black is white. You know, peace is war. I mean, it's really, I don't think it gets any more extreme than the times we're living in right now in terms of inverting everything. The opposite is true of whatever they tell us in the mainstream media. It's always opposite. And, you know, good people trying to do good things, they get criminalized. Really, I mean, it is pretty much everything is inverted. It's Orwell's world of, you know, the 1984.
Yeah, that is
true.
Well, dear Miss Monica and Mr. Bitterender, my brother, we have come to the end of this hour. Man, it goes so fast. I've enjoyed it. I've learned as much about history as you did, Miss Monica. You know, Eugene taught history in school. Well, thank you so much, Miss Monica. Thank you, Gene, for coming on tonight. And thank you to Fred and Jim and Cameron for and Jay for running the board. And thank all of our dear audiences for letting us pay a year in advance. Radio time. That's what y'all have done. Y'all, we could have never done it without you, without your donations. Our people will see you the same time, same place. It'll be the 18th of December, getting close to Christmas. And you know what? The Battle of the Bulge is the 16th of December. We'll have to talk about that a little bit. Anyway, good night, everybody. Good night, Miss Monica. Good night, Gene. Good night, Jay and Cameron. Thank you so much for making this show wonderful. Good night, everybody.